and universal credit levels are far too low to meet rising bills. As a Chancellor and then Prime Minister in Labour governments between 1997 and 2010, Gordon Brown oversaw plans that significantly reduced levels of UK poverty through spending on tax credits and social programmes, such as the minimum wage and Sure Start. The subsequent huge cuts to welfare spending under coalition and Tory governments from 2010 led to a collapse in benefit levels and an explosion in severe poverty. In 2022, an estimated 1 million children experienced destitution in Britain, meaning their families were unable to afford to properly feed, clothe, or clean them, or keep them warm.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyi al-mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi. قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم. مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم. الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. And when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you revive the dead," he said, "Do you not believe?" He said, "Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest." He said, "Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
As U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza continues for the 162nd day, a new airstrike on a refugee camp kills at least 36 Palestinians. Israel's Netanyahu rejects Hamas's new ceasefire proposal, pressing on with plans to invade Gaza's southern city of Rafah. And Palestine's Islamic Jihad deputy leader slams a U.S. offering of limited aid to Gaza while delivering unlimited lethal weapons to Israel. Dozens more Palestinians are killed as the Israeli regime continues ahead with its genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip, now in its 162nd day. In the latest airstrikes, the Israeli military has targeted al-Nusayrat refugee camp, leaving at least 36 people dead. Many people were also killed or injured in yet another bombing on the southern city of Rafah, which once Israel designated as safe for displaced Palestinians. Rafah has been targeted frequently amid the regime's threat that it will conduct a ground operation there soon. Now, since onset of Israel's campaign of genocide in early October, nearly 31,500 Gazans have been killed, most of them women and children. Israel's prime minister has rejected a new ceasefire proposal by the Hamas resistance movement that includes release of regime's captives in exchange for the release of Palestinian abductees. Benjamin Netanyahu's office issued a statement following a war cabinet meeting in Tel Aviv. However, the statement said a delegation will leave for Qatar to discuss Israel's position on a potential agreement. It also said Netanyahu would approve plans for military operation in Rafah, the southern Gaza city where more than a million people are sheltering. Earlier, Hamas said under its proposal, the occupying forces have to leave Gaza. Hamas said its proposal also includes the return of displaced Palestinians to their homes, provided with aid. The exchange of Palestinian abductees with Israeli captives held in Gaza was included as well. Israel's genocidal war has cast a somber tone over this year's holy month of Ramadan in the besieged Gaza Strip. Palestinians there are in dire need of food, grappling with devastating impacts of unrelenting Israeli bombardment and a crippling siege. Our correspondent in Gaza, Muti Abu Musabe, has spoken to some displaced Gazans who describe their plight.
I was displaced after the Israeli forces attacked our neighborhood. As you can see, we live in these tents made of plastic and fabric. We have nothing to eat but some canned food, which is the only thing that we have been eating for roughly 6 months. We don't even have gas to cook. I have 6 children and I don't know what to feed them.
I have been displaced from the Nusayrat refugee camp. I have 5 children. I came from Algeria to visit Gaza and then the war erupted. I hadn't expected that the situation could be as bad as it is. The situation is beyond catastrophic here, as people can barely find food, especially in this holy month of Ramadan.
This Ramadan is completely different from previous years. My 5 kids and I have been displaced from Gaza City while my husband is still there. We have no source of food. The amount of food provided by charities is also scarce. We're devastated and deprived of our basic needs.
I live here with my 8 children. Our lives are tragic. The situation is getting worse day by day. We're struggling to cope with this unbearable condition amid the relentless bombardment and bloodshed. In Ramadan, we are completely relying on the food provided by donors. Sometimes the food is scarce and we get nothing to eat. Eating canned food has also made us sick.
We have been displaced from northern Gaza. There are 7 of us living here. We are suffering a lot. The weather is too cold and there are no gas supplies. Because of that, I have to make a fire to cook food. Most of the time, we find no food or milk for the children. They always cry and get sick. The Israeli war has destroyed everything in Gaza.
A representative of the United Nations Population Fund for Palestine has expressed deep concern about the situation of newborns in Gaza amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught.
I'm personally leaving Gaza this week, terrified for the 1 million women and girls of Gaza, 650,000 of reproductive age, of menstruating age, and most especially for the 180 women who are giving birth every single day in Gaza. We need to have unfettered access, safe, at scale, with multiple entry points. So there's a lot more conditions on the ground that would need to be provided to ensure that the assistance can get to where it's most needed.
Allen warned on Friday the humanitarian situation in Gaza is a nightmare for mothers and babies, with doctors reporting abnormal size and sick newborns. He said doctors also point to tragic situation related to stillborn births and neonatal deaths caused by malnutrition, dehydration, and complications. He also said numbers of complicated deliveries are roughly twice as mothers are stressed, fearful, underfed, and exhausted, and caregivers often lack necessary supplies. Allen described situation in Gaza as a crisis of humanity and beyond catastrophic, adding those children should be wrapped in their mother's arms, not in body bags. Israel's genocidal war has so far killed 31,500 civilians, most of them women and children. Now, we held an exclusive interview with a deputy leader of Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement. In it, he details the latest ceasefire plan proposed by resistance in Gaza, but cast doubt over Israeli willingness to reach a political settlement.
A new proposal was submitted, which divides the agreement, meaning that the first phase would begin, which includes the prisoner swap, and we agreed to add other elements to it, which would include a withdrawal from the Rashid Street and the Salah al-Din Square, which would allow for the return or guarantee the return of the displaced to their homes in the north of the Gaza Strip and Gaza City. The second phase, which includes the swap of the soldiers, which must include guarantees for an end of the war, an end to the aggression, and an end to the ceasefire. And the third phase would include pledges to begin the reconstruction of Gaza. We believe that the Israeli government, because it includes a number of members of the far right, will not respond, and it has maneuvered. There is maneuvering on the part of a Netanyahu government.
Hindi, however, said such Israeli maneuvering will not lead anywhere because of Palestinian steadfastness. He said resistance is carrying out operations in areas which Israel claims to have captured, including in the north of the Strip and in Khan Yunis to the south. The resistance official also highlighted U.S. complicity in Israel's campaign of genocide.
In this aggression, there is American agreement with Israel. And the American administration is a complete accomplice with Israel, despite the crocodile tears which they are shedding. So the goals are to eliminate the resistance, and these are American-Israeli joint strategic goals. So the goals are the same, but there is a disagreement regarding the priorities. The Americans talk, for example, about sparing civilians, but the civilians are being killed with American weapons and bombs. And some of these weapons reach Israel even behind the back of the Congress.
Hindi described as an act of hypocrisy, U.S. delivery of limited aid to Gaza through airdrops and a so-called temporary seaport while delivering weapons to Israel. He said U.S. is attempting to mislead international conscience and to buy time for the Israeli regime. Hindi also pointed to Israeli threats to invade refugee-packed city of Rafah, describing them as meaningless given the large extent of Israeli losses and casualties elsewhere in Gaza, which he stressed the regime is concealing. Political analyst Saeed Shabi joined us earlier and told us about two major failures of Israel since its creation, despite committing all sorts of crimes and atrocities.
There are a few points here. Number one, Israel, after 75 years of occupation, has not secured its own security. For 75 years, there have been only wars, crimes, genocidal policies. They have been repeatedly criticized by international bodies. So on the security front, they have failed to achieve their own security, despite what is said about their sophisticated security systems and sophisticated military hardware. They have failed. This is number one. Number two, when they waged the war on Hamas and on Palestinians in the last 4 months since October the 9th, when they started their operations against the Palestinians, they declared and they said that our aim is to destroy and demolish the resistance movement, especially Hamas. But now, after 4 months or almost five months, they have failed to do it. They have not been able to defeat the resistance movement. And this is what happened in the last, as I said, 75 years. They have never been able to defeat the resistance movement. On the other hand, they have been bombing the citizens, the ordinary civilians in Gaza, sometimes in Jerusalem.
Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Al-Quds witnessed a record number of worshippers on Friday, Tawfer evening, and special Tarawih prayers in the holy month of Ramadan. According to Palestinian media, some 90,000 worshippers gathered at Islam's third holiest place on Friday evening, largest in the past several months. That despite regime's restrictions on Palestinians' access to the Al-Aqsa amid growing tensions over the genocidal war on Gaza and increased violence in the West Bank. Reports say Israel's beefed up forces around the mosque and prevented hundreds from entering there. And still, around 80,000 people performed the first Friday prayer of Ramadan. Mosque has frequently been a flashpoint for violence, often sparked by storming of the complex by Israeli settlers under protection of troops. Ramadan celebrations and decorations have been minimized throughout the old city in Al-Quds as the Gaza war casts a shadow over the festive period. Yuval Israeli troops have carried out fresh incursions into several towns and neighborhoods throughout the occupied West Bank. We're now joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Candil, to get the details. Hello, Mona. Hope you're safe and doing well. What can you tell us?
Well, let's start with the fresh raids that the Israeli forces have carried out here in the occupied West Bank. Israeli soldiers stormed several neighborhoods and towns in Tulkarem, and this time they arrested a number of Palestinians, mainly in the village of Ramin. Israeli forces also stormed several neighborhoods and towns in Qalqilia. The Israeli soldiers stormed the homes of Palestinian prisoners, and they caused severe damage inside the homes and destruction. And at the same time, they interrogated the family members of those Palestinian prisoners. The Israelis maybe stormed one of the Palestinian prisoners. His name is Ra'ed al-Hatari. Ra'ed al-Hatari is sentenced to life 22 times. And at the same time, the Israelis stormed his home in Qalqilia. They caused severe damage in the property of the house. They destroyed one of the vehicles owned by the family, and then they left the home after interrogating family members. The Israeli forces raided as well the old town of Nablus and arrested a number of Palestinians. According to the residents of Nablus, they said that the resistance groups had fired explosive devices or detonated explosive devices to Israeli military vehicles during the military raid for the old town of Nablus, and a number of Palestinians had been arrested as well. Last night, you have to mention that the Israeli forces carried out a large-scale operation in several areas in Jenin. The Israelis stormed the town of Al-Jalami, Arbouni, and other areas north east Jenin, and the Israelis had also stormed the town of Arabi, south Jenin. But they had set up mobile checkpoints and barriers between the village of Arabi and Yabad in order to prevent Palestinians from transporting between those two villages. And in case the Israelis closed the main road that leads to the town of Arabi, then Palestinians will not have alternative routes to leave the town of Arabi to Yabad. You have to mention that in the last few weeks, the Israeli forces had been storming the town of Arabi several times and arresting Palestinians. A number of people had been killed there. And you have to mention that Arabi is the hometown of Palestinian martyr Sheikh Khadr Adnan, the senior leader of the jihad movement. Israeli forces had also stormed an Arub refugee camp in Al-Khalil. We are speaking now about southern, the occupied West Bank. The Israelis had fired heavy tear gas at the homes of the Palestinians in Al-Arub. The Israelis had also stormed the village of Bani Naim, east Al-Khalil, and arrested a number of Palestinians. The exact number of the Palestinians who had been detained across the occupied West Bank last night and this morning has not been revealed yet, but according to a recent report by the Prisoners Society, 7,600 Palestinians had been detained since the 7th of October here in the occupied West Bank. Among them, there are 4,150 Palestinians are being held under the illegal administrative detention policy, and this means that the total number of the Palestinian prisoners today in Israeli jails is approximately 9,150 Palestinians. Among them, there are 3,558 Palestinians are being held under the so-called administrative detention.
And Mona, before we let you go, we don't have much time left, but really quick, many people thought that maybe during the sacred holy fasting month of Ramadan that we'll see less raids and less killings and less detentions of Palestinians by the occupying forces, but it seems like they haven't missed a beat, have they, since the beginning of the fasting month of Ramadan?
Well, Palestinians are saying they know very well that in case the aggression on them would come would decrease, let's say, then the Israelis would have allowed the Palestinians to go to inside Al-Quds and pray in Al-Aqsa. The Israelis had only allowed women above the age of 50, men above the age of 55, conditioning that they have to get Israeli issued permits. This means that any Palestinian, those elderly people have relatives, whether they are martyrs or prisoners, they will be denied to enter Al-Quds. So at the same time, the Palestinian youth are not allowed to enter Al-Quds, and this means that the Israelis will continue to storm the areas. And also, 2 days ago, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered his cabinet in order to open new prisons, because in the coming period, the Israeli military will be arresting thousands of Palestinians. This is what Netanyahu had told his cabinet to do.
Okay, thank you. Mona, stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Mona Kandil joining us from Occupied Ramallah. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive, to let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
Ayahs, 30 days. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. A monotheist person not only reflects on the Quran, but also tries to explain the ayahs of this heavenly scripture to others and make them familiar with its teachings. Explicating of the Quranic teachings, first of all, was the duty of the Prophet and his infallible successors. Every faithful too, according to the extent that they had learned from the Ahlul Bayt, embarked on this heavy duty. So the ulama that are Muslim scholars took over this duty after the occultation of the 12th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, and have seriously continued this job till the present day. Today, this duty has become highly important due to the broad assault of enemies against the beliefs of Islam and humanity. In the fifth episode of Ramadan special series, we are going to explain Ayah 124 of Surah Nisa of the Noble Quran. The ayah speaks on righteous deeds and the equality of man and woman in this regard. Stay tuned, please. Ramadan is the month of a banquet whose host is Allah, and everyone has been invited to the banquet. Fasting is not like Hajj, which is obligatory only when a Muslim is able, both physically and financially, to do it. Also, fasting is not like Khums or Zakat, which become obligatory for the additional amount of money or specific properties. Fasting also differs from daily ritual prayer, which is obligatory on everyone in any condition. Fasting is obligatory only during the blessed month of Ramadan for men and women who can abstain from eating and drinking for certain hours. Woman in Islam is equal to man in reproduction and continuation of generation. Man is father and woman is mother. Woman's role is not inferior to man. Both of them are essential for life. Allah says in Ayah 124 of Surah Nisa of the Noble Quran, "And whoever does righteous deeds, whether male or female, should be faithful. Such shall enter paradise, and they will not be wronged so much as speck on a date stone." Ayah 35 of Surah Ahzab of the Noble Quran also reads, "Indeed the Muslim men and the Muslim women, and the faithful men and the faithful women, and the obedient men and the obedient women, and the truthful men and the truthful women, and the patient men and the patient women, and the humble men and the humble women, and the charitable men and the charitable women, and the men who fast and the women who fast, and the men who guard their private parts and the women who guard,
and the men who remember Allah greatly, and the women who remember, Allah holds in store for them forgiveness and a great reward. This ayah clearly shows that man and woman are equal before God. The road to perfection and sublimity is open for human beings regardless of their gender. As for social and personal rights too, there is no difference between man and woman. What seems to be discrimination in a few specific laws is due to the differences of man's and woman's nature. Therefore, some advantages are granted to man and some others to woman. God names Pharaoh's wife Asiye as a role model for all faithful. He also names Prophet Noah's wife as a role model for unfaithful. It means that woman is the axis of good and evil for the whole mankind. The reality of woman's status and dignity has been ignored in human systems throughout centuries. Some civilizations considered women inferior to men. Some others even considered woman as an animal at the service of man. In the ancient Rome, man was the absolute authority at home. He could sell, lend, or donate his wife as a means of pleasure or service to others. If she committed sin, he had the right to punish her in any way that he wished. He was entitled to even kill her. This continued in the West till Renaissance and the so-called era of Enlightenment. With the onset of the Industrial Revolution and formation of capitalist system, a new phase of woman's slavery began. The capitalist system, in order to increase consumerism and coordinate the market of supply and demand, was in need of forging a hunger for consumption of goods. In view of this, the media controlled by capitalists modeled the tastes of society in line with their vested interest. Thus, people thought that they should consume more to have a happier life. This trend led women, consequently men, to excessive consumerism. Women, however, were harmed more due to their nature. Therefore, they started a competition towards physical show-off. In other words, profiteering media inculcated the feeling in women that their value and personality was related to exposing their female beauties and attractions. This turned women into tools in the hand of companies and tradesmen. Consequently, sexuality and nakedness became a norm, and little by little it became the highest criterion to evaluate women in the West. It is a matter of laughter that this magnitude of disrespect to women and instrumental use of them has ever since been introduced as support for women's rights, and Islam has been propagated as a violator of their rights. Ruling systems in the world have raised various claims on women since old times, and most of them have been formed with the motto of equality of the rights of men and women. The Islamic Republic system is not an exception in this respect. The Islamic Republic of Iran has put forward a novel view on women, and that's why it has been the target of incessant assaults by enemies for 45 years. Iran's Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi said in an interview with the Italian journalist Oriana Fallaci in 1974, "In the life of man, woman is not considered anything except when she is beautiful and charming, keeping her female features. You women have never had a Michelangelo or Bach or even a great cook. You have had nothing great. Honestly, how many women have you seen in your interviews who are able to administer a country?" Imam Khomeini, the architect of the Islamic Revolution, however, says on human dimension of woman is a human and a great human. Woman is the trainer of society. Elsewhere, Imam Khomeini says on the Prophet's special attention to women, the history of Islam is testimony to the unlimited respects of the Messenger of God to this noble child to show that woman enjoys a special greatness in society such that if she is not superior to man, she is not inferior. The Imam's view is in total contrast to the Western culture. Imam Khomeini considers woman as the trainer and manager of family, as believes that woman's lap is the best school for educating children. He says, on the status of mother, the many rights of mothers cannot be counted and fulfilled. One night of mother for her child is more valuable than a committed father's life. The embodiment of affection and mercy in the bright eyes of mother is the ray of mercy and affection of the Lord of the worlds. The hadith that reads, paradise is under the feet of mothers, is a reality. The Noble Quran presents the best and loftiest descriptions on women. This eternal book of guidance says in Ayah 21 of Surah Rum, and of his signs is that he has created for you mates from your own selves, that you may take comfort in them, and he ordained affection and mercy between you. There are indeed signs in that for those who reflect.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
How many more children?
Gaza, October 7th. The sun is coming up. Boats are moving up and down in the cool sea breeze. Seagulls flying over the beach. The law before the storm. Suddenly, a bulldozer breaks the Israeli-built fence around Gaza. No one really knows what is happening. In no time, fighters from Gaza take control of the Beit Hanun crossing. A land, air, and sea attack into the heart of Israeli-occupied territories. Palestinian forces attack military installations and take over various settlements. The Israelis in the Sharon plain wake up to the blare of sirens. They're caught off guard. Danger is around the corner. They don't expect their holiday to be ruined like that. Israel describes the operation as an unprovoked attack, blaming Hamas for disturbing the peace in the region. In the United States, politicians echo the same narrative. Former U.S. President George W. Bush calls Hamas cold-blooded killers.
This was an unprovoked attack by terrorist people willing to kill innocent people to achieve an objective. And don't be surprised if Israel takes whatever action is necessary to defend herself. And it's going to be ugly for a while. You're dealing with cold-blooded killers.
But is the Palestinian group's operation really an unprovoked attack? And isn't there anything surprising about it?
Let me show you a map of the Middle East.
Just a couple of weeks before Hamas launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had unveiled his future map of the region at the United Nations General Assembly. The map had no place for Palestinians, and Israel still included the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip, as well as the occupied and illegally annexed Golan Heights of Syria. The little map was in fact the blueprint for the complete elimination of Palestine from the region for the sake of the so-called Greater Israel. Israel's prolonged policy of ignoring Palestinians' rights as a nation is clearly reflected in its illegal settlement projects. Built on usurped territories, these settlements and their cancerous expansion have dashed Palestinians' hopes for establishing their own state and ending their lingering limbo as a nation under occupation. In recent years, the Israeli regime has put settlement expansion at the top of its priorities. In one of the recent cases, Netanyahu passed a controversial resolution in June 2023 and gave a carte blanche to his cabinet to construct more settlements in the occupied West Bank. One month later, the head of the Regional Council for West Bank Settlements, Yossi Dagan, submitted a proposal to Netanyahu to increase the number of Jewish settlers in the northern West Bank from 170,000 to 1 million by 2050. There are already over 700,000 Israeli settlers living in 176 settlements and 186 so-called outposts in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem Al-Quds. All of these settlements and outposts, and the settlers who live in them, are illegal under international law. Since occupying the West Bank and Gaza, Israel has unilaterally declared tens of thousands of hectares of a so-called state land for Israeli settlements. mushrooming across Palestine, these illegal settlements have made life excruciatingly difficult for Palestinian communities, aggravating their already dire situation. In addition to depriving the families of a home, which is the main asset and source of mental, physical, and economic security, the settlement building and its concomitant evictions of Palestinians frequently result in the loss of livelihoods and expansion of poverty. These settlements always come with the uprooting of Palestinian trees, destruction of their cultivated land, and discriminatory management of water resources in favor of the settlers. To make life even more difficult, restrictions have been imposed on Palestinian movement and access to resources. The Israeli regime has set up checkpoints, barriers, and separation walls that drastically limit the freedom of movement for Palestinians. This has had a profound impact on their daily lives. It affects movement within parts of the occupied Palestinian territories between the West Bank and Gaza, as well as between occupied Palestinian territories and the rest of the world. Since 2007, Gaza has been subjected to a crippling blockade, which has caused immense suffering and a humanitarian crisis. The food supply is also limited by the siege. From 2007 to 2010, Israeli authorities kept a calorie count of Palestinians' nutritional needs to narrowly avoid malnutrition while restricting access to food for the people in Gaza. Today, according to the World Food Program, a significant portion of the population is food insecure. In 2022, 1.84 million people across Palestine, one-third of the population, did not have enough food to eat. Among these people, 1.1 million were considered severely food insecure, 90% of whom lived in Gaza. The Strip also suffers from an energy crisis. The Israeli ban on the entry of fuel into Gaza means that electricity production is severely limited. In 2023, before the Hamas-Israel escalation, Gaza had only 13 hours of electricity a day. The blockade has also taken a toll on the Strip's medical facilities. Hospitals lack basic supplies, equipment, and infrastructure, and are unable to handle severe cases or provide proper care for the chronically ill. The blockade also has crippled the economy, leading to high unemployment rates and widespread poverty. With nearly half of the population out of job, the Gaza Strip has one of the highest unemployment rates in the world. Data also indicate that more than 80% of the Gazans live in poverty. The blockade has turned the territory into an open-air prison where the residents have no place to go, no job to do, and no hope to cling to. According to the UNRWA report published in August 2023, for at least the last decade and a half, the socioeconomic situation in Gaza has been in steady decline. Israel's inhumane behavior usually takes even a harsher form. The regime's military operations in Gaza have led to high civilian casualties and widespread infrastructure damage. The destruction of homes, schools, and hospitals has left countless Palestinians dead, displaced, or in desperate need of assistance. Just within the period of a few weeks since October 7th, over 10,000 Palestinians have lost their lives, including over 4,100 children. In fact, in every action the Israeli regime takes, there is one recurring feature: lack of respect for Palestinian lives. From 2008 till September 2023, 6,407 Palestinians were recorded to have been killed by the Israeli regime, more than half through missile attacks. Targeting Al Ahli Hospital in Gaza on October 17th that killed more than 500 Palestinians was the very epitome of the regime's brutality. At the same time, Tel Aviv is also accused of using white phosphorus in its military onslaught on Gaza. The banned substance puts civilians at risk of serious and long-term injuries. As a weapon, white phosphorus has a significant incendiary effect that can severely burn people and set structures, fields, and other civilian objects in the vicinity on fire. Israel's use of the deadly chemical violates international norms. Prior to October 7th, there were about 5,200 Palestinians in Israeli prisons, kept under dangerous prison conditions. Of this number, nearly 2,000 were condemned to life sentences on trumped-up charges. Palestinian prisoners are subjected to torture, starvation, and thirst while being prevented from accessing their medicine. Israel is using different legal pretexts to withhold the detainees from different areas. Palestinians from the Gaza Strip who were arrested inside Israel are being held under the Unlawful Combatants Law, which allows authorities to detain Palestinians indefinitely without effective judicial review. The law defines an unlawful combatant as a person who has participated either directly or indirectly in hostile acts against Israel or is a member of a force perpetrating hostile acts against Israel. On October 13th, Israel amended the law to make it easier to arrest Palestinians on mere suspicion. The unlawful combatant law is the equivalent of the so-called administrative detention in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, which allows Israel to hold Palestinians from those areas indefinitely under secret evidence, practically meaning under no evidence. The number of prisoners has now risen to more than 10,000 people. Since October 7th, Israel has arrested some 4,000 laborers from Gaza and more than 1,000 people in the occupied West Bank. Just a few days before Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, thousands of settlers carried out provocative tours of the mosque complex, following calls by extremist Jewish groups. Since the occupation of East Al-Quds in 1967, Tel Aviv has allowed Israeli extremists to intimidate and violate the sanctity of the mosque. Under the so-called status quo agreement, only Muslims are allowed to pray inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Entering the mosque with boots on, beating worshippers, firing bullets and grenades, as well as vandalizing the site, have become common scenes in Al-Aqsa, the third holiest place for Muslims. Thank you. In just 1 year, between September 2021 and September 2022, nearly 50,000 right-wing Jews raided Al-Aqsa Mosque. Is only part of the systematic Israeli campaign to Judaize Al-Quds. Against such a backdrop, the betrayal of the Palestinian cause by some Arab states in the form of the so-called Abraham Accords in 2022, and rumors that Saudi Arabia was just following suit, could be regarded as the last straw. The normalization of ties between major Arab states and the Israeli regime sends shockwaves through the occupied territories. Forgotten by the international community, betrayed by Arab brothers and oppressed by the brutal regime of Israel. Palestinians are left with two hard choices: to give up the homeland altogether, or to die for it. There is nothing surprising that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was launched from Gaza. It is an impoverished, congested place inhabited largely by Palestinian refugees expelled from their homes during the Nakba of 1948. Gaza has also been under a debilitating siege for years, which has taken a heavy toll on its people. In fact, what appears to be the largest military response by Palestinians in decades is an inevitable development, an act of resistance, and a reaction to the suffering of the nation under a brutal blockade and occupation. It is part of the Palestinian struggle for freedom. This struggle for freedom is, however, an uphill battle. The Israeli regime, in blind rage, has undertaken a new episode of mass killing of civilians. Israel is carpet bombing Gaza. Telecommunications infrastructure has been bombarded, effectively cutting off Palestinians in Gaza from the rest of the world. Tel Aviv has imposed a full blockade on Gaza, with no water, electricity, food, or medicine entering the strip. Meanwhile, the West Bank has been completely blocked. Checkpoints closed all across, paralyzing the whole territory. Israeli soldiers are shooting Palestinians and encouraging settlers to do so as well. Genocide is in the making. Israeli jets will continue to pound Gaza as long as the Gazans' hearts continue to pound for their land. But how many more Palestinians have to get killed? How many more men? How many more women? And how many more children? Life has lost its meaning for the Palestinians, who have been stripped of their homeland. So the only thing they care about is taking back their stolen land, their own land. That's the red line drawn by their blood.
In the limelight.
Economic boycott against the Zionist regime is not a new phenomenon. It hits the apartheid entity where it feels and hurts the most. It is one of the most significant weak spots of the Zionist regime occupying Palestine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International wrote, as the low-intensity regional war